Today we're approaching spiritual receptivity via spiritual rebirth. And part of that is tuning in to what experience is like far down the path to awakening. And towards the end of the morning, we did that meditation where we tuned into our heart wish. We had a figure, or not a figure, a symbol, light, or just a sense of qualities, but in some form or another, we were in touch with, or doing our best to be in touch with, or imagine the qualities of awakening above our head, and then they dissolved into us after we'd received the Adhishtana, the blessing. And we just sat. So it's kind of an interesting question to consider. There we are, just sitting, not separate from the Buddha. So how would a Buddha just sit? What would it be like to be a Buddha just sitting? Because if we can get a feeling for that, then we'll be in the right direction, we'll be on track. So, to begin to answer that question, fundamentally, the difference between our usual just sitting and our just sitting when we're a Buddha would be that we cling on to and identify with bits of our experience, whereas the Buddha wouldn't do that. We know that essentially our mind is no different from that of a Buddha. That's why we can become a Buddha. That's why we can develop as human beings. The difference is that we cling to things. So if we just kind of put ourselves into the position of the Buddha and he's just sitting. Everything is just flowing through. We're not, as Bhante would put it, appropriating any of the experiences. So everything is just arising and passing away. There's an appreciation of that. There's no resistance to things arising and passing away. In fact, everything that appears and disappears is a confirmation of how things are. Every experience just reveals itself as impermanent and selfless, just flow. And I think another aspect, if we were just to imagine ourselves sitting as the Buddha, would be everything would be fresh. All our experience would be fresh. I remember years ago, Bhante giving a list of 15 points for order members, old and new. And it was around the time when I'd spent 6 years as his secretary, and I'd been on lots and lots of men's ordination courses with him. And of those 15, I could probably have guessed most of them. But the one that I didn't guess and that didn't occur to me was keep beginner's mind. Keep beginner's mind. And I think it's taken me the last 25 or 30, whatever years it's been, to see the importance of that. That sort of freshness of experience. And certainly in traditions where they do a lot of just sitting, there's quite a lot of emphasis put on this. Like in the Mahamudra tradition, there's an image of a meditator being like a young child gazing at the murals in a temple. So if you could imagine sitting here sort of completely fresh to your experience, and you kind of look towards the shrine, and there's all these figures, but you don't know what they are. You don't know that, oh, you know, that one there is Prajnaparamita, and oh, that one here is Vajrasattva. You're not bringing any sort of story to it at all. You're just taking it in a very simple but very, very direct way. And with that, there's a sense of wonder. There's a real sense of the wonder of experience. It's almost like being surprised by experience. Because we live in such a world of concepts, and because we have our habitual patterns and our favourite kleshas and so on, we, after a while, tend to live very much in a world of labels and habitual responses to things. And we lose the wonder of life. We take things for granted a lot. And our labelling helps us do that. So I come upon Vajrapriya, say, and rather than being aware of this sort of unique phenomenon, this process that's unfolding, you know, behind those glasses, I just have this kind of common label, which is Vajrapriya. And every time I see him, I go, oh, there's Vajrapriya. And if I'm not careful, I sort of stop at the label. I stop at the recognition. Part of the reason why we label things is it's sort of self-preservation. You can imagine, you know, sort of primitive man sort of out in the jungle, you know, it's quite useful to be able to kind of identify and label your experience. Yeah, that's the wind in the trees, that's the saber-toothed tiger. You know, it's a very useful thing to be able to do. But we often can't turn it off. And labels in themselves aren't too bad if we use the label as a pointer to go deeper into the experience. But very often we don't. We just stop at the labelling. So I look at the shrine and go, oh, that's a nice little Kuan Yin there. But my sort of freshness of response, my sense of not taking it for granted, my sense of just the wonder that I'm actually having an experience in the first place, I've lost that. So part of just sitting, part of this idea of in the scene, just the scene, in the heard, just the heard, is coming back to that sense of openness, which opens out into being a sense of wonder. It's because we take life for granted. It's because we take ourselves for granted, everyone else for granted, the fact that the whole thing is happening in the first place for granted, that we lose that sense of how extraordinary it is. How extraordinary it is that, you know, this moment is happening. How extraordinary it is that we're all sitting here together. You know, kind of. Actually, for anything to happen, you know, there's an unthinkable number of conditions that have had to come into play. It's, you know, so in that sense, you know, every moment is miraculous. It's a wonder. And part of this openness, yeah, it's openness to sights, to sounds, to thoughts, to all kinds of experience, to feelings, to emotions. But it's also an openness to, what do we call it? To the mystery of things. It's an openness to deeper intuition. It's an openness to Adhishtana, to blessing. And I'm not sure I want to define Adhishtana. But we can say that at least Adhishtana as an experience is something which gives us a sense of deeper dimension to life, something far richer and fuller, something which is wonderful. So an aspect of just sitting is keeping fresh in all the senses. So we do this by doing what we can to let go of clinging and identification, and just to be really open to the fact that things are happening. If we're not taking that for granted, then there's a sense of wonder, of freshness. And one aspect of that is being open to whatever we want to call it, the deep intuitive, and open to deeper forces, higher forces, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Dharma, Niyama, functioning, however you want to put it. Somewhere we're sitting also with an openness to that. Whether you want to sit in terms of the influence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and the teachers, as it were, out there, whether you want to see it in terms of the arising of deep forces within the mind, doesn't matter, they're both wrong as ways of looking at things. Yeah? They just are. You know, that whole in here, out there thing is unsatisfactory. But, you know, we work within a sort of spatial reference points, so we can use either, doesn't matter, or some other way. The main thing is that we're open to the possibility of something deeper, higher, richer, yeah, coming in. That we sit with a trust in our own mind. And we sit with an openness to the possibility that there's far more to life than we realise, and that far more is richer and more fulfilling, and more wonderful, more marvellous than we could have imagined. In a way, a lot of the time, in the Indo-Tibetan tradition, there's an image that's given of Adhishtana being like a rain. It's like a great rain of blessings that is beating against your window, but you have your window closed. In fact, all you have to do is just kind of open the window. I mean, the rain of blessings, you know, it's like real kind of Welsh rain, you know, sort of driving horizontally, you know, strongly against the window. So you only have to open the window a little bit and you get completely drenched, sort of drenched in blessings. But the thing is, we keep our windows closed, and we do that by what we're telling ourselves. We are telling ourselves such a limiting story about life that kind of keeps the blessings at bay, you could say. Yeah. We have a limited story about who we are, what the possibilities of life are. Even if there are blessings, well, we don't deserve them. Or at least we have to earn them by working incredibly hard, practicing right livelihood endlessly whilst also meditating 16 hours a day and doing lots and lots of spiritual friendship and so on. So it helps, because it's true, to have a vision of life and the mind where miraculous things can happen. Enlightenment is kind of a fantastic sort of miracle, isn't it? That you can become completely free of suffering, that you can be completely wise, completely compassionate, and so on. And yet, either, you know, all those people who have been lying to us over the last 2,500 years, or it's possible. So we have to allow, we have to open our minds to the fact that life and ourselves have far deeper potential than we usually give ourselves and life credit for. And we don't have to, again, sort of take that on as a story, but we do have to be really open. You know, we just have to be open to what's there. We have to not tell ourselves a limiting story, if you see what I mean. And if we're just sitting with as much openness as we can, with as much freshness as we can, taking as little for granted as we can, telling ourselves as little of a story about how we and life are not okay as we can, then we're getting at least somewhere in the direction of sitting like a Buddha. Then things can open up. And sadhana is a way of taking our mind through experiences which are much more how we would experience if our minds were really open or if we were much closer to Buddhahood. So if in sadhana we live out a set of experiences which kind of demonstrate to us how things really are. And part of that is that we can transform. In the sadhana we may transform into Avalokiteshvara or Tara or whoever it may be. And also we're in connection with beauty and richness and the blessing, the influence that comes from that. So in sadhana, in imagination at least, we're training ourselves to let go of a very limited story about life and to have an experience of a very different way of experiencing life in the world. But often we may practice sadhana, we may have those kinds of experiences, but we leave them in a special box marked sadhana. We don't apply them to the rest of life, whereas the aim is that sadhana is just a special opportunity to explore and experience these things, which we then carry into all this. And it's partly because we have a lot of sort of materialist assumptions. Even if we don't feel that we do consciously in our society, it's so strongly there that, you know, this is the real world. Yeah, can you eat it? Well, maybe not, but you know what I mean. Yeah. As this is the real world, then the world of dream, the world of imagination, they're all the unreal world. Yeah, they're all in a box marked sort of fantasy, you know, sort of not really how things are. Which means that the lessons that we learn from sadhana, we don't apply here. But actually, they're aiming to, what we're being pointed to in sadhana is universally true. Maybe I'll see if there's any questions right now.